evening and welcome to today's talk. We will begin with a little meditation, but before that, some of you are asking me that you are unable to download the talks that we have had. But you can actually download them. You have to go to the website, brahmakumaris.dk/fourth half. And then you will have all the talks for the past 2 years have been uploaded. So you should not have a problem. So website, brahmakumaris.dk/fourth half. And then you have to type in the mobile number or the email that you have used to register for these talks. And then you will have access to all the talks. If you still have difficulty, please send an email to the center and they will get back to you. Okay? But let's begin with some meditation. By the way, these are very nice things, right? Gives you a lot of peace. We tried to take them off, but someone has put them on there with a permanent marker, so we need spirit or something to take it off. So we will just tolerate it. Or appreciate it. Actually, it's modern art. You can see a lot of nice things in there. But never mind. Let's begin with some meditation. I allow myself to relax completely. Letting go of the tension from all the muscles of the body. I relax my feet. I relax my legs. My stomach, my chest. I relax my shoulders. I relax the muscles of my neck and face. I relax my eyes and forehead. I feel the wave of relaxation flowing throughout the body, from the top of the head to the tip of the toe. And in this relaxed state, I turn my attention away from all thoughts of the past and the future. I bring myself to focus on the present moment. Sitting here in this room, on this chair, I turn my attention inwards and I feel the flow of energy throughout the body, the life force. And now this energy begins to travel upwards through the body, from my feet to my knees, from my knees to my waist, from my waist to my shoulders, flowing further upwards through the neck and the brain. The energy begins to get concentrated in the center of the brain. Concentrated into a tiny point of light. A sparkling star shining in the center of the forehead. That energy which was before this body was, that which will be after this body is no more. My original and eternal existence of light, of energy, the soul, the spirit. A sparkling star. Indestructible, eternal, peaceful, blissful. I feel as though this physical world and this physical body has disappeared. And all that remains is light. I, the eternal spirit, a sparkling star. I see myself in a world of light. I see myself in that original home of the soul, that heavenly world of light, that world. That world of silence. And in this world of light, I see myself once again in the presence of the Supreme, in the presence of God, the light of all lights. The ocean of peace. The ocean of love.
a point, source of infinite peace. Shining down upon me. His light, his grace, entering the soul. Filling the soul, healing the soul, I come closer and closer to him, until I am totally lost in his light. Absorbed in his love, lost in the ocean, I, the soul. In the presence of God, like two sparkling stars, two beings of light, lost in holy union. Letting his light flow into me, filling me with grace, and mercy, and holding on to this blissful silence, holding on to the light of the Supreme, I allow myself to gently return back to this physical world, back to this room, back to this body, this costume of mine. Once again, I take my place in the center of the forehead, spreading the light of life throughout the brain and the body. Looking out through the windows of these eyes, listening through these ears. Within this body and yet separate from this body. I, the soul, a child of God, a being. Peace, my original nature. Peace, my only religion. Shanti. So good evening and welcome again. How many of you are here for the first time today? First time to these talks? Quite a few of you. So, very often in meditation, in this system of meditation that we practice here, we call it Raj Yoga. The organization that I represent, where I have learned Raj Yoga, is called the Brahma Kumaris World Spiritual University. And we often say these words, Om Shanti. The people wonder, what is it? Is it some religious mantra? Is it something you have to keep chanting when you sit in meditation? No, it is not that. It's an awareness, it's a consciousness. Om means I am. And who am I? I am a soul. Originally, I am a soul, I'm a spiritual being. So Om is the awareness of who I am originally as a spiritual being. And Shanti means peace. So the meaning of that is, I the soul, I the spiritual being, am originally an embodiment of peace. This is the, it's an awareness, it's not something to be repeated, it's an awareness. Very often people speak about the power of consciousness, right? So many people have written so many books, bestsellers, Eckhart Tolle and so many. The awareness, the importance of consciousness. And people often speak about how we create our world through our awareness. Say, as is your awareness, so is your world. As is your awareness, so is your world. In Hindi, these two words rhyme, so it sounds very nice when you hear it. I don't know if any of you know Hindi, but the words are Smriti and Srishti. Nowadays, mindfulness is very popular, right? In the Western world, people speak so much about mindfulness. And they practice it, they have applied it in psychology, psychotherapy, they have used it a lot with very, very good results. They have used it in healing of various physical problems, diseases, with very good results. There are many research studies on this. Mindfulness. The original word is actually Smriti. And what the word mindfulness captures is not entirely the original meaning of the word. The original meaning of the word Smriti is a lot more than what we understand as mindfulness. Smriti is awareness or consciousness. And Srishti is our world. So we say in Hindi, Jaisi Smriti, Vaisi Srishti, which means as is our awareness, as is our consciousness, so is our world. How do we create our world through our consciousness? What do we mean by that? And what kind of awareness are we speaking about? Today we will speak about some of these things. And we will speak about them within the context of relationships. Generally, whenever we have a talk on relationships, the registrations are the highest. And when we speak about negativity in relationships, we have the highest registrations ever. So, it touches something within us, yes? When we're preparing these talks and when we were thinking about the topics for these talks, so the topic was proposed, navigating negativity. So someone said, oh, it's also negative. Why speak about negativity? You should speak about positivity, right? Why speak about negativity? We should speak about positivity. When we speak about positivity, there are not so many registrations. So then one begins to wonder, what is happening here? What are the signals then? The understanding that we are, and this is one of the aspects of awareness. We want to be positive.
But to be positive, we have to understand the roots of negativity. Where does it come from? In fact, push it away, wish it away. Just wish it doesn't exist. Will it just go away? Can I just wish things away? We will speak about some of these things today. So, the topic for today is, the theme for this month has been navigating negativity. And for today, we will speak about relationships, negativity, and the other. Who is this other? So normally when we speak about relationships, so we have relationships, usually, perhaps all the time, relationships are between the self and there is another, right? There are two people involved, at least, if not more. Not necessarily people, it could also be relationship with, say, nature, relationship with other things. But today we will concentrate on human beings. So, relationship between the self and the other. So, there are at least two people involved in a relationship. And then, of course, we also understand that in this whole process of relating one with the other, very, very often we experience negativity. Don't we? Yes. Anyone here has had a relationship where there has been no experience of negativity? Anyone? None? No, even I'm not there, so. We always experience negativity in relationships. It's a part of human existence, so we just take it for granted. So today we will try and look at that. Where does it emerge from? Is it really necessary? We take it as a necessary part of life. You know, you can't have it. It'll always be there. Is it really necessary? How do we make it? How do we create it? How do we create it? I remember a few years ago when I was living in the Middle East, in Dubai, I met a couple. They were so much in love when they got married. And now it was about 15 years after their marriage. And now they hated the sight of each other. Despised each other. They had 5 children, so they were living with each other. They were sort of tolerating each other in that sense, you know. And the husband, he would like leave early before his wife would have a chance to actually start speaking to him. And then he would come home very late. And what was his excuse? Work. He was a big businessman in Dubai, so he had a lot of things to attend to. So work, he's busy. And the wife, she also knows when the husband is going to wake up. So when he would wake up, she would actually not be in the same room. She would be in the kitchen. So when he wakes up, she's in the kitchen. And she stays in the kitchen till he leaves. This was their daily orchestration, their pattern. Right? And then when he would leave, and he would always leave, and he would know when she would have to come out of the kitchen, when the children would wake up. Right? So he would make sure he would leave before the children woke up. So when the children would wake up, she would come out of the kitchen. He wouldn't be there. Comfortable, right? So there is. And so what was happening because of their conflict, the children also didn't get to see much of the father. So the father is off before they wake up. He comes home after they've gone to bed. So they see him on Sundays, or the Sunday in Dubai is Friday, because Friday is their Sunday. Sorry. But that's the day they have the holiday. That's the weekend. So he became, the guy they saw on Fridays, that was their father. So a very complicated relationship. Now they don't want to live together. And then, you know, we started speaking about how did they meet. And then they started telling their own story. And they would never tell the story in front of each other. No. So individually, when you speak to them, they gave me the story of how he met her and how she met him and how much in love they were with each other. And all the things that they loved in each other then, 15 years ago, the same things they hated in each other today. And so they're having this experience of negativity in the relationship. And when we have this experience of negativity in relationships, What is usually, what are your experiences when we have an experience of negativity in relationship, especially when it is really quite high level of negativity? What do we do? What are your experiences? What do you do?
Avoid.
Run away, take a flight. Why do we want to avoid? Why do we move away? What is the reason for that? What is the reason for that? Yes. What do we get out of moving away from that? Yes.
To avoid pain.
To avoid pain. We want to avoid, we want to forget. Very often, we, in order to avoid and in order to forget, we move out of the relationship also. No? It's very, very painful. So, I want to avoid this negativity, or I want to forget. I just simply want to forget. Very often, who do I want to forget? I want to forget this person. Because whenever I think of this person, it's very, very painful. So, I want to forget this person. Avoid and forget. Okay, so this other that we want to forget, this other who was so dear to us one day, the same other who has become a source of great pain, who we hate, who we detest today, we can't stand the sight of this person today, this other, where has this other come from? Where has this other come from? Yes.
Inside us. We have the other inside us.
We have the other inside us. How is the other created? Many of you may know this. I know many of you here sitting here are psychologists, so you would know this already. But we will very quickly go over some basic principles of this formation of the other that we all experience in our lives. The understanding is as the self, as I am growing up, right? As I am growing up. There are two levels of the self that we speak about on a spiritual path. One is the level of the ego. That is the self that is created through our interaction with the world. I learn things as I am growing up. This is the ego. It's neutral. There's nothing negative there. We're not speaking about arrogance here. We're speaking about I, my identity, that is developing in the process of growing up. I'm having an exchange with people, with society, with culture. And in this process, I am learning. I'm learning that some things are liked by people, some things are not liked by people, some things are considered good, some things are considered evil, some things... We learn these things. And if I display behaviors which are good, I am appreciated, I am accepted by my parents, by society, in that particular socio-cultural context. If I display behaviors that are considered wrong or bad or not worthy, then obviously I get a feeling of rejection or punishment from my socio-cultural context. And we know this can be very, very different. What is acceptable in Denmark is not acceptable somewhere else. What is acceptable somewhere else. So this is the level of the ego. However, from a spiritual perspective, we also say there is a deeper level within the level of the soul, the level of the original self. And we say that at that level of the original self also, there is an understanding of good and bad, which doesn't come from the world outside. That is an understanding that is inborn. It's a part of human conscience. And when I go against those core values of the soul, I experience a rejection from myself. When I am with those values of the soul, I experience an acceptance by myself. And so this whole process of expressing myself, experiencing the world, be it at the level of the ego or be it at the level of the original self, leads to a split in the self where I have the good me and the bad me. The good me, that part of me that has been accepted by myself as well as perhaps by the world around me, and the bad me, the evil me, that part of me that has been rejected by the world and also perhaps by my own inner self. Very often it is difficult to differentiate between what is this, my own inner self, and what is that self that has been a creation through my interaction with the world. It is difficult sometimes to differentiate between the two. But the process of meditation can help us in this anyway. So this is what is happening. Now this bad me is a thorn in my back. I don't like it. It keeps poking me, pricking me. And because it creates anxiety, it creates pain, very often this bad me is pushed out of awareness. It becomes a part of my unconscious. It is pushed out of awareness. However, the good me, the deeper good me, can also be pushed out of awareness. Why? Because if I am aware of the good me, I will also become aware of the me that doesn't match the good me. And so the purity, the divinity of the soul can also be pushed out of awareness, because if I bring that, this also comes into awareness. And this is very painful. I push that away, I push this away, and I forget myself. I forget who I am. I'm lost in the world of the ego. And because both these aspects are pushed away, they don't just stay pushed away. Because they struggle to come into consciousness. They struggle to come into consciousness. I don't want them to come into consciousness, because that creates pain. And so what happens? They come into consciousness through the world outside. That is what is referred to as projection, right? We throw these experiences in the world outside, we see them out there, and then we say, that's evil. So I project my evil out there and I say, that's bad, that's bad. I also do something else. I also project my beauty, my divinity, my greatness, my all the loving experiences within me that I cannot experience within me. I throw it on the world outside and I fall in love. The dynamics of falling in love. That part of me that I have split off, that I have pushed away, the good part of me, the beautiful part of me that I have rejected because it reminds me of the bad part of me. I want to experience it. I want to experience it. Suddenly, she appears to be so beautiful, so wonderful, the best person in the world. I want her to compensate for that part of me that I have pushed away. And so I am engaging in the projection of both these things in the world outside. However, we also understand that the other with whom I am having this relationship, this other has also gone through those same experiences. And so in this other as well, there could be this experience, and there often is this experience of the good me and the bad me. So this other is also going through the same process, right? So this other is also projecting things upon me, and as she or he is projecting, because I want to be accepted, but I can't accept myself, I want to be accepted by the other. And as she or he is projecting, I am introjecting. That is, I am taking in those projections within me because I want to make you happy. Because if I don't make you happy, you will run away. I have to make you happy. So all your needs, all your emptiness, I would like to fill them up. Because if I don't, I'm afraid you will go away. So I introject. Now, she has been brought up with her own cultural assumptions, with her own personal history, her own individual narrative, through which she feels she has her own picture of what is good and what is not good. She has her own picture of that, right? I am so eager to please her. I take in that picture within myself and I call it mine and I try to live by that picture that you have of me. But that picture is not me. Sorry?
Ideal self?
Yeah, but then what is our creation of the ideal self? She has an understanding of an ideal self. I want her with me and therefore I would like to live according to that ideal self. I have introjected. I have taken in a reality from the world outside which is not mine and I have made it mine. I call it mine. But since it is not my original reality, there is always an inner resistance because I'm going against my integrity. I am becoming subservient to the world outside. And the original spirit of autonomy and independence that is there in the soul rejects that. And there is a tension. I keep doing it. Inside, the soul is getting frustrated because I am letting myself be trapped in the prison of my own creation, our mutual creation. And a day will come when I feel suffocated.
And now, what do you do when you're suffocated? You want to push the other away, right? So for so long, I have been taking in, wanting to be like how you want me to be, out of fear, out of insecurity, not out of love. Out of fear, out of insecurity, because the split has created. So I have this split within me at various levels, at the level of the soul, at the level of the ego. So we speak about these two levels. And the superficial socio-cultural level of the ego and the level of the soul, I have this split. The moment I have this split, of course, there is the experience of insecurity because I find myself incomplete. And so coming out of insecurity, I want to please you, to keep you with me, there will be a reaction, there will be a rejection inside the soul. One day will come when it will be just too much. I won't be, because I'm afraid I can't live up to those expectations. I start pushing you away. There is also the frustration. Now, on the other hand, all those things that I have dumped upon you, all those things that I can't experience in myself, I dump upon you, you are not able to fulfill my needs. You are not that perfect goddess that I want you to be. No one can be that. You are not that. I start getting disappointed. I start holding you responsible for my disappointments. I start getting angry at you. I start messing up the relationship. Very often when we look at relationships of people who've lived together, we find these dynamics happening. Expectations. Expecting what? Want the other to make me full. You are responsible for making me full. She will also say, now you are responsible for making me full. Expectations from both sides. We are human beings. How long can we be available for others all the time, 24/7? Not possible. Get disappointed. Husband comes home, he's a little silent. He's silent because he's had some problem at work. But that doesn't matter. The wife wants him to smile at her. I don't care. But what are you communicating then? I don't care if you have had problems. You should smile at me. Make me feel good. And so she gets upset. She gets frustrated. She gets angry. And he says, he's thinking, I'm doing so much for her. I'm working for her. And I want to come home and be quiet. And she doesn't leave me alone. He gets disappointed, gets angry, and he gives it back. And you have the volley, and therefore we create a very long baggage that then we carry. And after some time, the baggage is too heavy, our shoulders cannot bear it. What to do? Forget it. Walk away. But what are we doing? We forget the other. It's like forgetting the self. It is too painful. And what do we do when we want to forget? One of the things that we do is, let's meditate. Right? Spirituality, prayer, problems in life, go to the church, become very, very. I remember myself when I was very young, when the examinations came, I became very religious. Very religious. I prayed so much. Even the priests would be ashamed of their lack of prayer. I used to pray so much. Right? After the exams, of course, was another story. So we pray, we meditate. I'll give you an example. There is this story of a real life story of a Buddhist monk, American guy. You can find it on the internet, Lou Nordstrom. Very famous story. He has a PhD, I think it was in mathematics, and he was a professor at Princeton. And he was getting tenure. You know, tenure is when you become permanently accepted into the faculty, and then no one can fire you. So he was getting tenure, and then he decided to give up all that life of superficiality and money and comfort, and he became a monk. He became a Buddhist monk. He tried out some experiences of yoga and meditation. He was always interested in meditation and yoga, right? So he liked it. And so one day he said, this life is not for me. Working and getting married and having children. No. I have to become a monk. He became a monk. And he was a monk for me. He taught mindfulness, so-called mindfulness meditation, many years. After a few years, he started feeling discontented with this life of a monk. So he left that. He came out of the monkhood, went back to his old life. But he was quite old now. So he couldn't get a comfortable job, obviously. But he started teaching a little bit here in Yale and Princeton because he had that background. Even after so many years, he was very, very competent. He got a few courses he could teach here and there. He got married once, divorced.
Married again, divorced. Married once more, divorced. Married yet again, divorced. 4 times. Now he's above 60. He's getting old. He has to struggle to pay his bills because he doesn't have a regular job. He has to go teaching here, teaching there, take a little money, pay his bills. He doesn't have a partner who he can come home to and speak to. He's married 4 times and all the 4 marriages ended in disaster. And a time in his life came when he was very, very, very seriously depressed. And he wanted help. And he turned to a psychoanalyst. So he goes to the psychoanalyst. And in this process, they start looking at his whole story. And a very sad pattern emerged. What was that pattern? He had a very difficult childhood. Especially the relationship with his mother was very, very painful. It was a relationship full of experiences of rejection, being rejected again and again and again and again. If I remember correctly, his mother was also an alcoholic. I'm not very sure about that, but there was some problem. Anyway, a lot of rejection. And so the pattern that emerged was, you're being rejected again and again and again. How do you feel?
No, this is your interaction. So I and my mother. And I want her to give me that security, whatever it is, which is quite natural. And I'm having those experiences. So I project my incompleteness on her and I want her to take care of me. But she has her own problems and she's unable to do that. So this experience of the bad me, I'm not good enough because my mother doesn't care for me. I'm not good enough. My mother doesn't love me. That means I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy. I don't deserve any love. These experiences are the child going on. What do I want to do then? I want to forget myself. I want to forget that past. I want to forget everything. What to do? Sit in meditation.
And in the process of meditation, he said, you go beyond the ego, you go beyond the self. The negative side of that is this. We can very well use spirituality as an excuse to escape from the past, escape from the self, escape from the other. That does not solve the problem. We end up repeating the same patterns again and again. So what was happening in his relationships? The fear of being rejected again. Before you reject me, I reject you. I want to be with you, but inside I'm afraid I'll be rejected again. I want to be with you, but inside, because I'm not good enough to be with you. I know you will reject me one day. Subconsciously, I engineer my own rejection. I engineer the collapse of my own relationship because I am not aware. And therefore comes an awareness. I am not aware of my motivations. I am not aware of what is happening inside me. I am not fully aware of the split that has taken place inside me. Yes, I may be aware at an intellectual level, but am I really aware in the terms of recognizing the split within me, recognizing the evil within me, recognizing also the great beauty within me that is there, that I have lost, the beauty of the soul, recognizing that. Also recognizing how, because of the loss of that beauty, I have generated evil. How, because of the loss of that beauty, I want the world to fill me up. Because of the loss of that spiritual beauty, I want a beautiful wife, I want a beautiful girlfriend. Because when I look at someone beautiful, I feel full. I don't recognize that is an illusion. And so I go through my life repeating the same patterns again and again and again, creating sorrow for myself, sorrow for others, deepening my karmic bondage and creating so much of suffering in the process. Awareness. Meditation is a fantastic tool, but I need to be aware of my motives. I need to be aware of why am I using it? How am I using it? Who am I really? What am I struggling with? If I use it superficially, just to push away all negativity, just to force it out of my mind, so I can experience some peace, it will work initially. It will work initially. Because the mind is so caught up in noise, sit for some time in silence, you feel peace, you feel good, then you want to do more and more of that. Which is very nice. We need that. But along with that, we also need a deep awareness of our history, of our past, embracing it, becoming, expanding our awareness so that it becomes an ocean. No storm can leave a mark on the ocean. Can any storm leave a mark on the ocean? On the ocean? Because the ocean is so vast and so deep, it can accommodate everything within it. Expanding our awareness, deepening our awareness so that it becomes an ocean. But for that, it's painful to face our problems inside. But when we can hold on to the hand of God, He doesn't have a hand. It's not a physical hand. But when I can hold on to His awareness, I get that support, I get that strength that will allow me to go and look deep into my own beauty, also into my own ugliness, and transform it, understanding that I am responsible. One of the important aspects of awareness is the sense of responsibility. I am completely responsible for whatever is happening in the world. If my wife is getting angry with me, I have contributed to that. How have I contributed to that? Yasmin, you wanted to ask something?
Yes, I just wanted to know, what do you mean by having an intellectual understanding of your problem or how to face it and the model type of...
An intellectual understanding is like, for example, we look at this model. Oh, the split, good me, bad me, introjection, projection. Yeah, I know all about this. I know it happens to all of us. It's also happened to me. Yeah. I don't feel it. I don't feel it because it is so painful to feel it.
But even when you feel it, and you have the pain inside you, when you're not able to express it all somewhere in words and actions.
We will speak about it.
Okay.
I'll give you an example of a very interesting... my friend Romas suggested that I read an article, very, very interesting article, a few days ago, I read it. It was about, you may know about this person, he was a doctor, a psychologist from Hawaii. His name is, Wen or Len?
Len.
Len. L-E-N. Yeah, you can look it up. Len. He was he was made responsible for, in a hospital, for a ward for the criminally insane. You know the criminally insane? They are not just mentally ill, but they are also criminally violent. These are people who have committed murders and rapes and very serious acts of violence. But because they are mentally ill, they are put in a separate ward. But they are so violent, many of them, that they have to be restrained. You know, physically they have to be restrained by putting some chains sometimes, giving them very serious medication. He was made responsible for a ward of these patients. In Hawaii, Honolulu, you know, Hawaii of America. It's an ancient culture there also. It's a very ancient culture, the indigenous people. And he was from those indigenous people. So they have this very ancient practice for forgiveness and reconciliation. It's a very long name. Opopo something. I'm sorry, I can't pronounce it. But it's a very long name. But they have this...
O-O-Po-Po-Nomo.
O-O-Po-Po-Nomo, something like that. No, yeah, something. But very interesting story. Now, the story is this. He was a student of that method under another teacher before him. And so he learned it and he wanted to practice it in his work. So when he became responsible for this ward of the criminally insane, what could a psychotherapist do? Go meet these people, try to speak to them. You know, you would try and do that. Try to develop some relationship, enter into a therapeutic relationship. He did none of that. He said, it's impossible, you know, I can't break through these guys. Go and speak to them. They won't speak to me. There is no point. Instead, he applied the principle of that healing method in a very unique and novel way. What did he do? Every day, he would sit and look at the reports. He did not meet any of these patients, by the way. He would sit and look at the reports of these people. He would study their symptoms. And then he would do two things. One, he would try and identify those symptoms within himself. First step. Second step. As he would be reading their symptoms, constantly he would keep repeating 3-4 sentences. What were these? I am sorry. Forgive me. I love you. I love you. Forgive me. I'm sorry. Why? The understanding in this ancient system is, if something has come into my life, in some way, I have created it. Whether you speak about past lives, whether you speak about whatever, it doesn't matter. He says, in some way, I have created it. And in some way, I am responsible for it. Total responsibility. I am responsible for it. If these people are having these systems, these symptoms of illness and this terrible mania of going and killing people, in some way I am responsible for it. And do you know what happened? Slowly, slowly, month after month after month, there was a dramatic improvement in the well-being of these people in the ward. Earlier, the attendants could not go into the ward. If they went into the ward, they would have their backs to the wall and they would move like this because they could be attacked at any time. Slowly, slowly, the attendants were very comfortable going into the wards. The chains were removed. After a few months, none of the patients were on chains. They started recovering. After 3 years, there was not a single person left in the ward for the criminally insane. Not a single person left. You can look it up. It's all over the net. I was amazed. You know, we speak about spiritual principles a lot. And there are isolated cases, one or two, and I will speak about some of them even now. But this was like, wow. I mean, can you do that? Really? The rational, scientific, skeptical mind will think, maybe something else. And, you know, you try to investigate it. Yeah, it's good. Let's do that. But he accomplished that. And of course, some movies have been made on that, some books have been written on that, and it's a very interesting. To me, anyway, even putting all that aside, to me, what does it communicate? To me, it communicates the power of the mind. And secondly, awareness, and the power of taking responsibility. I am responsible in some way. And if I take that responsibility, just as I have created the other, I can also start healing the other by healing myself, because the self and the other are... they cannot be separated. I am because of the other is because of me. Looking at the symptoms within me, healing them within me, releases a healing energy that can go and touch the lives of others. It's a very deep spiritual practice. Okay. It's easy to do all these nice things for people who have not done anything wrong to you, right? So these people sitting in the ward of the hospital, I mean, this doctor has not suffered, I mean, at least consciously, he has not faced their violence. He has not faced their crimes. So he can sit quietly in his clinic and say, I love you, I forgive you, forgive me, all that is fine. What happens in situations when others have done something to you, when others have given you sorrow deliberately, with intention? How do we work in such situations? How do we take responsibility in such situations? Is it possible? Is it doable? I'll give you another extreme example. This was when I was living in India. So a client, those days I used to run a clinic, therapeutic practice. A client of mine, she came with a very serious depression that started after a very bad, very, very painful, traumatic experience because she was raped. She, with a friend, had gone out. They were young students, so they went out. It was a very big university campus, something like 2,500 acres, huge campus, so it has forest and lakes in it. They went into the forest by the lake, and two men attacked both these girls with at knife point, and they raped them. Taking turns. Now that's a terrible experience, right? Experience of, you know, you've been violated, exploited, shame, guilt. I mean, so many things emerge for people who've had such experiences. Extremely, one of the most painful experiences to recover from. So quite understandably, she goes into serious depression. And she's been taking psychiatric medication. Nothing has been helping her. She can't speak about it to anyone because it is so painful for her to speak about. Also, she feels guilt, she feels shame, she feels so many things. So she comes and then we start speaking and a lot of things, nothing was really working. I asked her, how did you feel when this happened? Because, you know, first let her articulate her feelings.
And then she said, after a lot of things, she said, you know, to put it in a one sentence, I felt as though I was worthless. I felt I was just used and thrown away. As though I had no value, no worth, just used and thrown away. I took a step that many people might think a lot about before taking. But I asked her a question after some time. I asked her, has there been anyone in your life who has felt used and thrown away and worthless because of your actions towards them? Difficult question to ask, no? She was shocked first. She went into deep silence. She started crying. And then she said, yes. I said, who, what, when? Then she spoke about one of her boyfriends. And she said, I knew there was nothing in the future. I wasn't even interested in him, but he was there, he was the only one available, and he was nice, and he had money, and so I was with him, and but I never wanted to be with him, and after some time I just felt I just dumped him. I just walked out, no explanations. And she said, I never thought of that till now. And then, you know, she said something very amazing. She said, you know what? I deserve that. Now you would say, that's terrible. I mean, how? She's blaming herself. But after that, her healing process started. She started recovering. Because she learned to accept that. And she took responsibility for that. And she understood that in some way this has come back to me. I have given that kind of, I've made someone feel like that, in some way it's come back to me. The universe has, I don't know what. But then she could start taking responsibility for her life. She said, then okay, what's done is done. I have done something terrible has happened to me. Okay, now I can move on with life. I have settled what I had to settle. That was the attitude she took. She's fine now. She's still in touch with me. She writes an email now and then. She's working now. She's in America. Okay, she has a good relationship. She has a career. She's fine. But healing requires sometimes some very deep insights, deep awareness, and a deep responsibility. And one of the things that we can look at when we are looking at the negativity I'm experiencing in relationships, others are behaving like that to me and I don't like it. They are having bad feelings for me, bad behavior towards me. Sit down and ask yourself, how am I feeling? Second question, ask yourself, have I made anyone else feel like that? The chances are you will get the answer. I tried this on another person. So this was a man. He was working in a company. And he was working in the human resource department, and he was dealing with industrial relations. You know, industrial relations, you're dealing with the labor force, you're looking at union laws, you're looking at all these things. So you're working mostly with people who are hourly workers, lower down in the organizational hierarchy. And these are the people who are usually neglected, their rights are not taken care of, and therefore they come together in unions to protect their rights. So he was dealing with them, and he was fantastic in his job. He was excellent. People loved him. And the unions, even the unions loved him, because he would always stand up for them, fight for them, because he felt this was right and they needed to be taken care of. And for about 2 to 3 years, he used to fight for them with the management, get rights for them, and they really loved him for it. After 2-3 years, some of the union members were engaged in some unethical activities, something to do with money and something like that. He got to know about that. So he went up and he told them, look guys, you know, I've been fighting for you. You can't do stuff like this. This is wrong. And they said, they started justifying their behavior. And he said, I'm sorry, but you know, I have to report this. He told them that. I have to report this because this is simply not done. You can't do this. This is against all ethical principles.
So some of them said, no, 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 you can't do that. You are with us. No, you are with us. How can you go against us now? And all these dynamics. But for him, his ethical principle, he said, no, this is, you know, I have to do something about it. He told them, they wouldn't listen. They continued with their behavior. He went and he took action. Because he had the power, he had the authority. He never used that authority on them before, but he used it. He went to the management, he took disciplinary action, and he sent some people packing home, because that was wrong. And then what happened? Usually, you know, the conflict in the organizations. All the workers turned against him. And all the workers who were willing to do anything for him, the same workers, some of them would have had come to his office, sat in front of him and cried because of their problems and how the management was treating them, and he would help them out. These same people started picketing against him, almost came to violence against him. They started fabricating false cases against him. Sexual harassment. Easy, right? Sexual harassment. Fighting a case, and that's very difficult, you know, for anyone to fight. Sexual harassment, oh boy, then you're done. The courts are going to side with the woman, everyone is going to side with the woman, and you're going to have problems. They filed such cases, they made demonstrations that he should be removed from the organization, that they will not work if he's there in the office. Terrible, terrible, big disaster. And obviously, this was very, very traumatic for him. Extremely traumatic for him. Because his narrative was, I've done so much for them. And just because I stood up for a principle and they were wrong, they all turned again. How can this happen? How can this happen in this world? Terrible, traumatized. And you know, he comes and he goes through the whole process. I ask him the same question. So how did you feel when this happened? How did you feel? And he said the same thing. He said, someone I had loved so much had betrayed me. He said, what did you feel? He said, I just felt completely, completely worthless and rejected. Rejected, worthless, destroyed. Someone I had trusted had betrayed me. I asked him the same question. Did you ever in your life behave in a way that someone else would have felt the same from you? This one didn't cry. And the answer came quicker. He said, he thought for some time, then some resistance, and then he said, you know, well, when my father was ill, his father was ill for some time, on the deathbed, basically. And he said, I had to take care of my, and he said, my father was a very good father. He did so much for me. He loved me so much. And when he was ill, I had to take care of him. And there was a lot of stress on me because I also had a wife, I had children, I had a job, and I had to take care of my father. And I had to, you know, and there was nothing else. He said, at that time, I didn't have enough money to afford someone to come home and stay with my father to take care of him. So I could not hire anyone. I had to do the work myself. I had to take care of him. You know, everything was on the bed. So cleaning him, giving him physiotherapy, everything. And he said, that was so stressful that sometimes I was violent with him. And then he said, I even hit him on some occasions. Painful. Out of that frustration, he said, I even hit him. And I know, and then he said, then I know now, even in coma, people can hear, people can feel. And I know he knew what was happening. And I know he would have felt like that. And the moment he realized that, he recognized that, it came into his awareness, he could start forgiving those people. Because his rationale was, if I could do something that bad, this is nothing. This is nothing. And he said, I love my father, but I don't know, I was just weak, I was helpless, I was frustrated, and that's it. And he said, okay, so the universe has given it back to me. I'll accept it. He went back to the workplace. He started speaking to these people. He started doing things for them again. He started expressing love for them again. He said, you know, if I can do that, this is nothing. And those relationships started changing. It took a couple of years for those relationships to be repaired.
But then he joined another company, and before that, when he left that company, the same workers were in tears when he left. Because there was that love, right? There was that love. Why did the workers get angry? Because they loved him. They wanted him to be, even though in an irrational, childish way, but they loved him. When he went against them, it was they felt they were rejected. So they rejected him. It works from both ways, right? I am seeking something and they are seeking something. So I do something and then they feel, oh, this is bad, and then they reject me. And I feel rejected, then I reject them more, and then it becomes worse. Instead, if I can take control over my life, I can take responsibility through the right awareness and start, I can actually start healing those relationships. I can start transforming those relationships. It is possible. That is the spiritual principle behind managing negativity in relationships. If there is a negativity, first rule. From a spiritual perspective, I am responsible. How? I may not have any rational explanation. Sometimes I can have rational explanations, but in some way I am responsible. How am I responsible? Let me start healing that relationship. Why do people get angry in relationships? Why do people get angry? Let's listen to you, young man. Have you been angry with your mother sometimes?
Yes.
We've all been there, right?
Yeah.
Me included. Why have you been angry?
I don't know.
Yes?
Because she don't give what we want.
What we want. We
want something.
From her. Not from someone else. From her. Why?
Because we feel that she's responsible.
She's responsible for
us.
Yeah. We feel she's responsible to give. There is also an affiliation, there is love, right?
She must give love.
She must give love. And when we don't get that love, there is frustration. The frustration leads to anger. Behind anger in close relationships, usually there is love. The problem is that love gets mixed with some selfish attachment. That's all. Otherwise, there is love. That love is frustrated. People get angry in close relationships because their love is frustrated. So when someone is angry with me in a relationship, I need to understand I am not giving them enough love. It's very, very simple. They want love from me. I am not giving them enough love. I am not giving them enough attention. But if I am trapped in this split, good me, bad me, but I also want love. Why do you want love? I also want love from you. I want understanding from you. You give me understanding, I give you understanding. There is no end to that game. There is no end to that game. But if I take the responsibility, she is feeling angry because she is not getting love from me. And then I can use the power of meditation in the true way. Do this experiment with this. We will do this experiment now. I have done this, I speak from experience. There have been relationships, you know, in the past, friends, family, where I felt anger, pain, because I feel the other has rejected me, not understood me. And then I apply the spiritual awareness and I say, why did they engage in those actions of rejecting and not understanding me? Because they have felt rejected by me at some point. It doesn't matter whether their feeling was rational, irrational. It doesn't matter. What matters is I love that person. I may not want to say I love them now because I'm feeling angry, but at least I love them. The memory of that love is there in the soul. I can't forget it. In fact, I want to forget it because there is anger. The anger reminds me of the failed love and I want to forget it, but I can't forget it. I forget the anger, I forget the pain, I also forget the love. If I push away the anger, I push away the love. Because that anger has come out of the love. So I need to look at both. There is love. And because of the frustration of that, love got mixed with selfishness because of my own inner issues and therefore the anger. Sit in meditation, emerge. Remember God. Always remember God because we don't have the power to do it on our own. Bring Him into the middle because He can fill me up. No one else can fill me up. And then emerge that soul and emerge love for that soul. Speak to that soul. Tell that soul, I'm sorry, forgive me, I love you. Make yourself feel that.
do this every day for 1 week, every day for 1 week, you will find a drastic guaranteed, money-back guarantee. Money-back guarantee. I have done this so many times. Many others I know, Azam has tried it, Romas has tried it. I know the people who've been practicing meditation, so many of them have tried it. Yete has tried it, I'm sure, many, many times. Many people who've been practicing meditation have tried it. It never fails. Never fails. In my experience, it has never failed. That's the power of responsibility. It doesn't matter if the other has done something, even unjustified, irrational, unfair, it doesn't matter. I am responsible. If I'm feeling it is unfair, somebody else would have felt unfair because of some action of mine in the past. To take responsibility, express that love, meet that person, speak to that person, but more than your talk with that person, the change in your attitude will heal that relationship. You can experiment from today. Think of one relationship that you have had difficulties with in the recent past. We probably have one at least. Yeah? Someone that you have to meet, maybe a colleague, maybe a spouse, husband, wife, girlfriend, boyfriend, I don't know. A parent, could be anyone. And instead of holding them responsible for our situation, let me take responsibility for that situation. And let me reach out to that soul. This is the power of soul consciousness. We speak about soul consciousness, the awareness of being a spiritual soul. Awareness includes many things. Awareness, a simple awareness, first awareness. No human being can fill me up because no human being is perfect. I may want to believe they are perfect, but no one is perfect. They are like me. Some may be a little better than me, some may not be, but it doesn't matter. No one is perfect. Only he can, yes?
How do we do that?
You will do it now. You will have a meditation right now, but what is your question?
You know, just take responsibility from other. for example, a mother. You have some issues. It's the same, it repeats. And she's doing that again, of course.
Yes. But again, why is she doing that again and again?
It's just her intuition.
Who has created her? This is the understanding. Yeah. Who has created her? If she's doing something again and again, and I'm getting upset by that.
Not only me, but her life, in general.
It's possible. It's fine. But if I am getting affected by that, I need to ask myself, how have I created that? How have I created that? How am I creating insecurity in her? How am I creating feelings of inadequacy, inferiority in her? How have I done that in the past? Why is she behaving like that? And it doesn't matter if she's doing it with the rest of the world. That's not her. That's the first awareness. That is not her. That is the creation of the ego. The soul is not like that. The soul originally is not, first understanding, the soul is originally not like that. She has become like that because of her life experiences in which I have also played a part.
Yeah. But you know, it's a little bit different for me because if I, for all her faults, you know, is it okay that I take the whole responsibility?
What do we mean by responsibility here? Responsibility does not mean I start blaming myself for that. Responsibility here means I consider that person to also be a part of me. Of course, the soul is different. I am different. The souls cannot, you know, become one like this. But the person is an extension of me. Their weaknesses are my weaknesses. In some form, their weaknesses are my weaknesses. And if I can look at the same, the first rule before that we spoke about, if I can find those weaknesses within me, can I do that? Healing the other begins with healing the self. Sometimes we are so busy trying to heal others, trying to change others. The other is in relationship with the self. Am I working on myself? Am I changing myself? Am I healing myself?
If I don't do that, that effort will not be that productive. It will not be that effective. It doesn't work. It's just useless. In fact, then what happens is we are reminding that person again and again, oh, you are like this, you should change. Oh, mom, you know, you always do that. Oh, mom, I love you, you should change. You. And so what is happening? She is hearing that again and again. I am like that, I am like that, I am like that. I'm just reinforcing that on her. I'm not helping her at all. Instead, if I go into silence, understand, yes, she behaves like that. But she behaves like that because of something inside her for which I am also responsible. Let me heal that part of me that has created her, this other. Let me heal that part. Let me heal it with love. Let me look at her with love. And let me speak to her, not physically necessarily, but in my mind. But again, you must remember, if there is a selfish motive, it won't work. Selfish motive? If she changes, I'll feel good. That's a selfish motive. It will not work. Then the whole purpose, everything is defeated right there. And then I can sit in meditation for one full week, wanting my wife to change. Because if she changes, I feel good. So I can fool myself and tell her, I love you, I forgive you, I love you, I forgive you, I love you. I want her to change. I'm expecting an outcome. It will never work. That will never work. And therefore, many a times this healing business becomes a superficial exercise which will never work. I have to go very, very deep. Deep, so deep that I've become the ocean. No storm leaves a mark on the ocean. If I am the ocean, it will not upset me. If it is upsetting me, I cannot be successful. I have to go beyond the impact the person's behavior is making on me. I can do that by drawing deeply from deep within me. I can do that if I draw on the love of God, not my love. Then I can start transforming. Now we will do a little exercise for 10 minutes. In these 10 minutes, I would like you to think of one person with whom you have been having some difficulties with in the recent past. It could be a colleague, it could be a family member, it could be anyone. Yes? Like me, yeah, I may be creating difficulties for you, you're right. No. True. So think, if it is me, you can also think of me. But I hope it is not me. And then I will guide you through a meditative process in which we can experiment with these things. Okay? I settle down, putting all things aside, physically as well as mentally. Allowing the body to relax. Letting go of all thoughts of the past and the future. I go deep within myself and stabilize myself in the awareness of my spiritual existence. I, the eternal spirit, this body, my costume, my vehicle. The costume through which I play my role in this game of life.
I withdraw my attention away from this external physical reality, going deep within myself to the center of my existence, to the center of the forehead. I see myself as a sparkling star. Spreading the rays of light throughout the brain, throughout the body. And with the strength of this spiritual light, I experience the body to disappear. Until all that remains is light. I, the soul, see myself in a world of light, in the presence of the Supreme, in the presence of God, the one and only one who can fill me, purify me, make me complete. And stabilized in this connection, as a soul in the remembrance of God, I think of the person with whom I have been having difficulties with, a person associated with some painful memory, a person who I believe has done me wrong, who I believe has given sorrow to me. I emerge this person in front of me. I see this person in front of me. And as I see this person, I can see the physical body disappearing, melting away. And I can see the sparkling star, the soul shining. I look at the beauty of the soul. I see this person as that same being of peace and love and goodness, a child of God, just like me, no better, no worse than me. Worthy of the same love, worthy of the same respect that I want. And I say to the soul, forgive me. I could not give you the love that you wanted. I could not understand you. love you. And I will always love you. Forgive me. And I see the light of God falling on this soul, falling on me as well, healing, purifying our karma, and I lose myself in this deep ocean of love and mercy, forgiveness, oneness, beauty. I hold on to this deep silence, this healing silence, this powerful love, and holding on to the light of God, I allow myself to return once again back to this physical world of matter, back to this body, this costume of mine. And I once again take my place in the center of the forehead, looking out through these eyes, listening through these ears. I, the soul, a being of love, a being of peace. Om Shanti. So homework for you all. The homework is keep this person in your awareness for the next 1 week, not all the time, but take out some time in the morning for meditation, 10-15 minutes, work in this way, every day, at the same time as a discipline. Same time, mind you, same time as a discipline. Within a week, you will find a drastic change in your own well-being first, because you would have healed yourself. The power of love will heal you, heal that pain, and it is quite possible that that person will get back to you with a very different attitude. Experiment with this. We can speak about this the next time we meet. Tak for ide and go up.